I first heard of the Newtown tragedy at an airport. I was changing planes, and I saw people at the gate gathered around the TV. And so I went over, and they said, there's been another school shooting. And I said, oh, gosh, you mean a high school? And they said, no, it was an elementary school, which, of course, made it, you know, even more tragic. And took in some of the story. Then the next morning, I sat down with the New York Times and read this very detailed account. And, I mean, to say it was heartbreaking would be the understatement of the century, but the one that stays in my mind is the description of the parents getting news that their child had died. And they said you could hear the wailing of the parents outside the building. Well, I read to the point where I just couldn't read it anymore. It was just too overwhelming. And here was part of the problem for me. I was reading this account on what the Catholic Church calls Gaudete Sunday. Rejoice Sunday, the third Sunday of Advent. All the readings are about rejoicing in the Lord. And I had a homily prepared around, you know, finding joy in the Lord. And I have to confess to you, I've been a Catholic all my life. I've been a priest for 26 years. I've taught the doctrine of God for the past 20 years at the seminary, where we look at the problem of suffering and all of that, you know. But I'll confess to you, when I sat down that morning to do my morning office, and I'm reading the Psalms, that we're singing the praises of God and God's power and God's wisdom and goodness, I'll confess that the words kind of caught my throat, you know, and you think, well, where was this wise, good, and powerful God Friday in Newtown, Connecticut, when 6- and 7-year-old children were being murdered? It's the age-old problem. You know, this event, as horrific as it was, raises again this perennial problem of how do you reconcile the suffering of the world with the existence of a good and powerful God? The atheists, of course, classical atheists and new atheists, are very ready to pounce on this issue. How could there possibly be a God if there's so much suffering in the world? In fact, the suffering of children. Not long before Newtown, I happened to come across a YouTube video of Sam Harris, the contemporary atheist. And he was citing statistics. If you look around the world, he said something like, I think it was 8 or 9,000. Children die, I think it was weekly, in tragic circumstances, you know, from starvation or from a political situation or from violence. And he was saying to his religious interlocutor, how do you possibly find a belief in God given this terrible fact of children, you know, on a daily basis being killed in tragic circumstances all over the world? It's the age-old problem. As I say, it was made more pressing for me as I was reflecting on all this on Gaudete Sunday, rejoice. And let me read to you a little bit of what the first reading is for that Mass. It's from Paul to the Philippians. Listen now. Rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. The Lord is near. Have no anxiety at all. Well, again, in light of Newtown, those words kind of catch in the throat a bit, don't they? Is, well, how could you rejoice always? Have no anxiety in your mind? Okay, that's the problem, and we're all familiar with it. How do we get at it? Well, here's a first observation as I hold this Bible in my hand. In some ways, biblical people should never have been susceptible to the criticism raised by the classical atheists and the new atheist, Sam Harris. Because this book, this collection of literature, more than really any other book in the world, seems to me, is aware of depravity, of sin, of tragedy. Nowhere in this book is it implied that to believe in God is to believe that none of that will exist, that there should be no tragedy, there should be no depravity, there should be no sin. In fact, on the contrary, every page of this book witnesses to the coming together of those two facts. You know, I'll give you a good example of this coming together. In the Christmas story itself, which is, of course, celebrating the closeness of God to us, what do you find? But you find the story of the massacre of the innocents. And I bet we'll read that story with fresh eyes this year, because if anything, that story is more horrific than Newtown. This is a tyrant, a brutal tyrant, in a conscious way, a cold-blooded way, ordering the murder of babies, of infants. Well, it's right here in the pages of the Bible. It's ingredient in the Christmas story. So how do we make sense of this? I mean, how do we make sense of the coming together of these two things? If I can make another Pauline reference, it might help. In Romans, Paul says this: I'm certain that neither hunger nor nakedness nor danger nor the sword will ever separate us from the love of God. Now, Paul's not speaking abstractly there. Paul knew all those things firsthand: hunger, nakedness, danger, the sword. In fact, he died by the sword of an executioner. Paul knew all about that. But listen to the point he's making. I'm certain that none of that can finally separate us from the love of God. He's not naive. He's not living in a fantasy world. He acknowledges all the darkness of the world, but he has access to a level of reality that is deeper and more abiding. To believe in God is to have access to that creative ground of all existence, which is beyond all the vagaries of space and time, which is deeper than, more abiding than, the comings and goings of the world. Moreover, to believe in Christ is to believe in a power of love that is more enduring than anything that is in the world. Paul knew one thing: Christ and Him crucified. In other words, he's not hiding for a second from the brutality of the cross, but yet he can say, I'm in touch with a love, with a power that is greater than and more abiding than all of that darkness. With that in mind, go back to Philippians for a second. Because, again, these are not the words of a naive man who's living in a religiously induced fantasy land, right? Have no anxiety at all. Did Paul know anxiety? Of course he did. Hunger, nakedness, danger, the sword, all those things produce anxiety in the psychological sense. So when he says, have no anxiety at all, he's appealing to this level of awareness that is deeper than the psychological awareness of ordinary experience. It's this deeper perception of the love of God that's more enduring. Then see, listen, then the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. It's very powerful, isn't it? Our hearts and minds are always beset by anxiety. They just are. We're always worried about what's coming next, what my next obligation is, what's a threat to me. In fact, in many ways, we've all survived over the long years of evolution because our ancestors were very alert to dangers. That's why we're always beset with anxiety. Paul was beset by anxiety. But he knows a peace of God that's beyond all understanding and that will guard our hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. In other words, to put a sort of wall around them to guard our anxious hearts and minds, lest they fall into an utter despair. What guards them is this peace that surpasses all understanding. Let me close by going back to the cross again. Again, Paul, who says, I preach one thing, Christ and Him crucified. Christians gathered for prayer on the Sunday after Newtown. And in church after church, what was before their eyes was a cross. It's a Catholic church, it was a crucifix, but a cross. And, you know, prettified in different ways because they're in a liturgical setting. But the cross is something awful. You know, and again, we might overlook that because it's become such a religious symbol. But the cross is a man, an innocent man, more to it, the innocent Son of God, who is being brutally put to death in a conscious, cold-blooded way. The cross is worse than Newtown. The cross is worse than anything, any tragedy in human history. The Son of God being put to death. Do we hide it? No. Do we run from it into a fantasy land? No. We put it right in front of us. Why? Because we know that through the power of the resurrection, a love that is greater than anything that is in the world has been made manifest. There's no power, no tragedy, nothing so horrific that the love of God does not envelop it, conquer it, prove greater. That's why, you know, for Christians, this problem has a particular texture, this problem of suffering. Because we don't offer an abstract solution. Like, well, here's my philosophical account of how to reconcile God and evil. We don't do that so much. We hold up the cross. We hold up evil in all of its intensity and power. But we do so with a peace beyond all understanding. Because we know the love of God is more powerful than anything that is in the world. That's the Christian response, it seems to me, to Newtown and to all the other tragedies down through human history. We're in touch with the God who doesn't eliminate evil from the world. That will come at the end of time. That will come with the eschaton. And God, for God's purposes, allows evil to exist. And that's a deep mystery in itself. But the point is, we're in touch with a God who is greater than and more powerful than anything that's in the world.